Hey, Last Podcast on the Left listeners, we're looking to get some advertisers to help our podcast stay free as it always has been. We just need you to complete a short anonymous survey that's going to take no more than 5 minutes. The answers that you give are going to help to match us up with advertisers that are going to best fit Last Podcast on the Left and you.
All right, and if you do complete the survey, you're going to be immediately entered into an ongoing monthly raffle to win a $100 Amazon gift card, which is a pretty great prize if you ask me.
We promise not to share or sell your email address. The fucking government doesn't. But we won't send you an email unless you win. Please go to podsurvey.com/last. That's podsurvey.com/last to take our survey and get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card or, you know, we're gonna sell you some e-cigarettes.
Yeah, that'll be great. Henry, what would you do with a $100 gift card from Amazon?
I think I would buy the new expanded edition of Book of the Law by Aleister Crowley.
Do something better than that when you win with your $100 Amazon gift card.
Thank y'all and hail Satan.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the Last Podcast
on the Left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
I got to say, can these Russians just name a pass something nice?
Just that would be
once.
Nice.
Can it be called like Jefferson Pass or Washington Pass? I'm so sick of these Rifion passes and Dilyatov passes. That's why these skiers die in them.
Dilyatov. I love
Dilyatov.
Ready to go, Marcus?
We're ready.
All right, welcome to the show. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel, who's joining us.
My name's Randy Johnson. I'm a professional skier from the hills of Tennessee.
Well, there's a baseball player named after you, too. The big unit, Randy Johnson.
Yeah, and I ever see him. If I ever see him once in person, I'll give him a slap on his big Jew nose.
Well, I don't know if he's Jewish, and that would be rude to do if he was.
He does have a big
nose. I
gotta
tell you, I've never seen a bunch of skiers lose their fucking tongues and mouth muscles on a place called, like, Keith Urban Pass. That's what I'm saying. Can't be Urban. Calling into the Tylenol Pass. What is this? Some kind of... I ain't got time for this shit.
Dilatov.
I gotta go down to the Texas Mariners and go find Randy Johnson, the original Randy Johnson, and pull on his pecker until he makes some doorbell noises.
Oh, I think you would love that. Keith Urban Pass. I feel like if you go underneath it, your pants tighten up and your nuts get bigger. He's one of those guys. He's got big balls and he's letting everybody know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You can see him if you watch his videos. Yeah, they're hugging up.
What do you mean? Is this one of those weird drunk things you do at night? Is that you sit and watch Keith Urban videos and stare at his fucking nuts?
No. I've done it stoned. I've done it. All right, Dilatov Pass.
Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, ladies and gentlemen.
Did they know what they're listening to?
Ben, you have to do the intro. If you do not provide the structure of this show, people are going to lose their fucking minds.
Welcome to Serial, the podcast. Everybody loves it.
I haven't listened to it yet.
I haven't either.
I heard it's good. All right, welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, a far superior podcast to every other podcast out there. All right, Marcus, what's today's subject all about?
Today we're talking about the Dilyatov Pass incident.
Now, the reason why doing this is because the fucking flimsy reason is because it's cold outside.
Right.
That's why we decided to do this topic, as if it's cold and we needed a topic, and this is the coldest topic we could do.
Oh, it's very cold out there. Miserable.
What we were going to do a whole episode on people freezing to death, like the Donner Party and the Brazilian soccer team and all them, but once I started getting into the Dilyatov Pass incident, I found so much interesting shit. This has everything. It's got Yetis. It's got aliens. It's got KGB conspiracies.
Cool.
It's got weird Russian Native Americans. I don't know what the term is for a Russian Indian.
Ukrainian?
I think so. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the Yeti KGB?
It's possible.
Uh-oh.
You'll just
definitely
have to listen.
Trained by the KGB. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he stayed with the fucking faction or right. they splintered off and made some sort of black op group on their own. Who knows with these fucking Russian Yetis? I can trust an American Bigfoot.
I agree. I think the Yeti, what's better, Sasquatch, Yeti, or Bigfoot? I think we've had the discussion before. I say Sasquatch because it sounds like a food.
I say Sasquatch too.
All right.
Sasquatch means wise man of the mountain. So
very good.
That's what it says. The other thing about Dilatov Pass is, I mean, people have been requesting this topic. We've been aware of this topic for a long time. It's very ooky spooky. Mm. But the other thing is, too, is that it's one of those great, perfect events for us where it's got everything. It's got all the shit and tongues missing.
Ooh.
And big-titted German women.
Ooh, yes. Very good.
And ugly Ukrainian men.
No, leave them alone. They're going through a hard time right now.
So the Dilatov Pass incident, it's an event that resulted in the death of 9 skiers north of the Ural Mountains in Siberia on February 2nd, 1959. Sonny
Bono was not involved then, huh? Sonny Bono died in an isolated Sonny Bono incident.
Yeah, that was much later. That was in the 90s. So it happened on the east coast of Kolyatsiyakl. And that,
I think that's good. It's beautiful language. Beautiful.
Kolyatsiyakl. And that name in the language of the local indigenous Munsee tribe means, alternatively, it means either Mountain of the Dead or simply don't go there.
Yeah. Now, this is the thing, is that, you know, ancient peoples have been wrong about a lot of things.
Right.
You know, they've been wrong about, like, slavery and, like, don't keep bears as pets.
Mm.
But sometimes they're right. And sometimes if they name a place like, hey, don't go there, like specifically
right.
if it's called, hey, let's not go there, they normally, like, that's a general direction. That's like a, hey, we did go there once and it wasn't like the funnel cake stand.
Nope, don't go there.
That we made in the town square.
I love how literal these people are. What are you going to name it? Everybody died there. Don't go there.
So in January of 1959, 23-year-old Igor Dilatov.
You never hear of an Igor skiing.
You don't think so?
No, I never thought. I feel
what
like
are
this.
Talking about?
I feel like he skis on his
only
knees.
Only travels by ski or toboggan.
Igor? I can see the toboggan.
Igor's travel by ski or toboggan or pulling a cart with their own bare hands that's full of fucking bones.
So he led a group of 8 young Soviet hikers comprising of 7 men and 2 women, and they were mostly university students. He led them into the Ural Mountains attempting to reach Mount Ortorten from a small settlement in Vizhai. It was a 350-kilometer-long ski trip, and it was meant to commemorate the 21st Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union.
I mean, again, they did this dumb ski trip that they all died on to commemorate the Communist Party, and what do we do for America on July 4th? We fucking drink beers and have barbecues safely in a park.
Yes.
Well, we don't know if they weren't drunk. There's a good chance they were loaded when they did all of this.
So all of these travelers, they were all very experienced mountaineers. This is very important to know later on. They were very experienced mountaineers. They skied across frozen lakes and long stretches of uninhabited areas just to get to the point in which their bodies were found.
Oh, I thought that was just to get to the supermarket.
And that was just to get to
Russia.
The Bjorg store in order to repair their freshly used Bjorgs.
Exactly. Oh, I love that Bjorg store. Where'd you get your new Bjorg at? The Bjorg store?
Yes, I went to the 4th Bjorg store on the corner of Bjorg Street and Bjorn Avenue.
God, I gotta get a new Bjorg. Jesus.
So the
Jorgi, can I ask one question?
Uh-huh.
What technically is Bjorg?
It's a, bread?
It's bread. It's got to be bread.
So there was only one member of this expedition that survived, this guy named Yuri Yudin, and he got sick before the crew made it fully into the backcountry, and he stayed behind at the village where all these people were last seen alive.
Cool.
And in later interviews, he remembered a conversation between one of the local men and Igor Dilatov. He didn't catch the entire conversation, but it seemed like to him that the local was trying to warn Dilatov about something. He was trying
it's
to
called don't go there. You don't go there.
You do not go there. If anybody over 60 tells you not to go somewhere in a town that you have never been to before, don't go there.
Don't go there.
Don't go there. Because if they liked it, if it was super boring and they liked it, which is what these people like, just go skiing as a fucking habit or whatever. I don't know. I understand people who ski.
They'd be there. If it was nice, they'd be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to see if Yuri Udin, instead of actually being sick, and it was actually some sort of series of shenanigans where he accidentally super glued his butt to a toilet seat, and that's why he couldn't go.
Well, he stayed behind, this Yuri Udin guy, but the other nine trekked on, and on January 29th, it continued over the Lozva River and to the Ospija River, and not much is noted in their journals, because they did find many journals from these travelers. The only thing that they noted on these days is that they were following a Mansi trail. Mansi being the indigenous people who told them,
when
who named the place,
read this,
don't go
I
there.
I thought it was Mansi. And they were all like a bunch of broad-chested, like big, thick, burly-haired, like man, like huge men.
Follow the Mansi trail for the good times.
But then I looked them up on Wikipedia, and they are very tiny.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
Yeah, they're very tiny. You have to be small and compact to survive in the mountains of Siberia.
Interesting. I would assume a broader, more hairy type person would survive best.
No, they got to be like little balls of fat and heat.
Takes too much meat. And the problem is that the Russian government with the Mansi tribe, this is going to come back a lot with these tiny people, is that they were very much, they were maligned by the Russian government. All these other tiny indigenous peoples were given their own literature section. Like, basically said that, like, they would collect all of their writings and teachings together, but the Mansies weren't. And so there's a lot of feeling that there was bad blood between Mansies and Russians proper.
To be fair, that just means they got, like, different color bricks put in different corners of a library, and that was their literary section. I read red. Oh, you read blue? We don't like each other.
We don't like each other.
So despite just terrible weather and slower progress than they really wanted, the last diary entries from these people were extremely high spirits, and they even had a little bit of fun. And I don't know, I read this I found this in a website, but it said, charmingly, in a very typical Soviet way of bonding, they even produced a little newspaper about the trip, which they titled The Evening Ortotin. And it bore the headline, "From now on, we know that the snowmen exist."
Oh, that's Russian fun.
But
originally, that sounds like a fucking weird warning about Yeti, right?
Yeah, it does.
It does.
It really does. "From now on, we know that the snowmen exist."
Scary.
So it's very possible.
But the problem is that there's such a fucking group of like Hummel figurine people that it just came out super cute.
Yeah, exactly. So they decided on the night of February 1st to camp at the bottom of the mountain slope, which was a pretty dangerous place to camp. Right. They would have been much better moving a mile down the tree line, in which they would have gotten much more shelter in case of any sort of accident, any sort of avalanche or something like that. But what they think is that it can be explained for two reasons. Either one, Igor wanted practice camping on the slope, or just plain laziness, because they didn't want to go back down the slope and then come back up again, losing a mile.
Another documentary I watched said that apparently at some point during this, when they had set off on February 1st that night, is that the weather was really nuts and that they may have stopped because it was snowing really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also,
I don't know. That is to be told.
Yes.
So Dilatov originally said that he was going to be back in contact with Yuri on February 12th.
But he was supposed to send a note to his sports group?
Yes.
And it's just like every Soviet and like German, like they all are like decathlon, like decathletes, and they all like shoot and jump and swing on ropes. And they were so much, they should have won World War II.
Yeah. Well, they pretty much did.
Yeah, they were on our side. Technically, they did.
Yeah, they beat the Germans.
Yeah, unless you wanted the Germans to win.
So, do you not want me to talk about your grandfather anymore or win that bit?
No, ladies and gentlemen, there was a small technical issue while Henry was defaming my late grandfather, and I think we're just going to leave it out.
Grandfather would have liked if Germany won the war because then he would have been celebrated as a war hero instead of being buried in a shallow grave.
Yes. Thank you, Henry. Very kind of you.
So Dilantov told Igor, or Igor told Yuri that he was going to be in contact with the sports team by February 12th, but it could be longer. But it wasn't until the 20th when there was no contact whatsoever from the team of nine hikers. And by the 26th, the camp had finally been found by a volunteer search and rescue team. And nothing that they found made any sense.
Now, this is an incredibly mysterious incident. As has been told a number of times, it's a very famous incident. What they find here is very strange, because the way they try to explain it out rationally really doesn't make any sense.
No.
Now, is it because they're drunk, or does it not make any sense?
I mean, the thing is that what they didn't know for a long time is that there was a thing called Lederhosen fever that was spread by mercury being put in the comically large buttons in front of the Lederhosen that would make a Jort or a Bjorts, which is the term for a female or a male in Klerkistgok, wherever they're from, what the language is. It would make their genitals corrupt, and they would go mad. Well, so that also could be an explanation.
My mother made me and my older brothers wear Lederhosen. Well, I was three. My other brother was five. My other brother was seven, so he wore it to second grade.
Oh,
and then we got made fun of a lot, and now he's gay.
So what did she do with those Lederhosen when you guys were done with them? Did she use them as a giant truck cover?
Yes, I think she sold them to a high school baseball team. And they're the Lederhosen.
And they cut it up and made it to the uniforms
for all
for the
whole
kids.
Team. Yes, it was sort of when Jesus turned the fish into many.
Yeah.
They turned the Lederhosen into many as well. How is this different than the U.S. Mysterious missing national parks, people in national parks missing? Is this sort of their version?
It's actually very similar.
Yeah.
It's very similar in terms of when they find people and it's far away from where they lost them. We're going to see right now when we go through the separate facts where you find them like a mile away from the actual site, up mountains. You found one with evidence of them frantically trying to climb a tree. And removal of clothing, which is seen a lot in the disappearances in the National Forest. Very strange, very high strangeness.
So when the officials found the nine dead bodies on February 26th, the first thing that they found, the first thing they noted that was really strange is that the tents that these people had been sleeping in, and they were sleeping when whatever happened, the tents were cut apart from the inside.
Did you look at any of the pictures as well?
Yes.
If you look at the pictures, they are ragged cuts too.
Yeah.
Like they were frantically trying to get out of these tents for whatever reason. God knows. Maybe there was some sort of fucking candy sale. You know how these fucking Germans are with candy.
Yeah. So maybe someone freaked out inside the tent and they were attacking from inside and then you had to cut your way out? Was that the deal? Or?
Well, we'll get to the explanation.
Come on here. What's happening?
Yeah. And so they ran out towards the tree line. All nine people ran out of their tents. And a lot of shoes and gear was left behind. Like some people left. And this was, the temperature was negative 24 degrees. When all this was going
on. So that's a balmy Russian 74 degrees.
Yeah. I mean, some people left barefoot, some left wearing nothing but socks. And in some cases, they left with just one sock or just one shoe, which is very strange. Yeah. These people left quick, fast, in a hurry. Some of them did. Others we'll find did not leave in such a hurry and were much better dressed, but we'll get to that in a bit. The first two bodies they found at the tree line under a giant pine tree an entire mile away. And investigators wrote that footprints disappeared about a third of the way there, although that could have been due to the weather in the 3 weeks it took for the investigators to arrive.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they could have been, but still, the first two bodies were found a mile away, and those two bodies, they were wearing only their underwear, and both were barefoot. And according to the reports, the branches were broken up high in the tree that they were found under, which suggested that they had tried to climb the tree.
And they apparently also is that when they were there, one source I was reading was saying that they found skin, like basically shreds of their skin in the bark. Oof. As if they were like frantically trying to climb up a tree.
Yeah, yeah, very fast. But they also found remains of a fire, which suggested, I think it either suggested that they were too frightened to go back to the tents. Something at the tents freaked them out so much they decided to make a fire in their underwear, or it was pitch black. And they were a mile away from the tents. It was pitch black, and they had no idea which direction to go. Either way, it was terrifying. And these people also were found with burns on both the tops of their heads and their hands.
Huh, sort of like what happened to the Wet Bandits in Home Alone.
Yes.
Very interesting. Oh, where was...
Maybe they came across a young boy that was alone in the woods who thought they were a bunch of cat burglars. And he set up a series of pranks for him.
Hmm, possible. How did they...
But then what happened? What would have happened to the fucking Wet Bandits in Home Alone happened to them, which is they were dead. It killed them.
Right. How did they survive this long to even make a fire in negative 29 degree weather? I mean, and just wearing underwear and socks?
Well,
they're Russian.
Yeah.
I think we're going to chalk up a lot of things to their Russian.
Yeah, absolutely. So three more bodies, including Igor Dilatov's, were found at points in between the camp and the tree where the first two bodies were found. And they lay as if they were trying to head back to camp. But one of them had particular strange injuries. His name was Rustem Slobodin.
So his forehead had to be sloped, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Rustem Slobodin is just, it reminds me, it's just like, seems like a guy who only works out his, like, pecs and arms, but he's got tiny legs.
Like the characters from that David Spade sketch where they're all roided out and they just have the little legs.
Oh, no.
It's a great SNL sketch if you Google it. I don't know.
Yeah, I want to pump you up. Yeah, yeah, and he's just like, look at how large my chest has gotten. Oh, it's difficult to keep a balance when I'm running, when I'm balancing on the ball for circus class that I take every Wednesday.
So he had very sad, a lot of these people had very strange injuries. Let's start with Rustem's.
Yeah.
First of all, he had traces of a blood discharge coming from his nose. Mm. He had a swelling and many small abrasions of irregular shapes on the right side of his face. He had other abrasions on the left side of his face. His skin was torn from his right forearm. He had bruises in the joints on both hands, which suggests that he was involved in hand-to-hand combat, and he also had the fracture of the frontal bone of his skull and hemorrhages in his temporalis muscles, which this could have actually been done by a foreign blunt object. And the autopsy states that Slobodin probably suffered loss of coordination due to initial shock right after the blow, which would have sped up his death from hypothermia.
Now, when I hear the term foreign blunt object, I think like an Asian vase. Is that is that wrong?
Yeah, it's possible. Or he was hit with a Frenchman. One of the
hit
two.
With a Frenchman, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, how am I sick? I am sick of being a weapon.
So it's very strange that he should have the injuries that he has, because usually when a person falls, it's their palms that suffer the most. Mm. Of course, you know, when you fall, you put your hands down first. But the injury to the head, especially where his injury was, is much less common.
Now, what does a bilateral injury mean?
I'd say bilateral, probably. So it probably means an injury on both sides of the body. Like you have injuries on the left side of your body and injuries on the right side of your body.
It looks like this. It's, according to this, it's two black eyes.
Ah,
there we go.
There you
Double black eyes.
Left and right.
No, so they found these guys all at first, and then they bagged them up and they tucked them away, and they didn't know what to do. But the next, it took 2 months until they found the rest of the bodies.
Yeah, they had to wait until the spring thaw before they found the rest of them. And those people were buried under a dozen feet of snow in a gully a few hundred feet downslope from the big tree. And this is where...
This shit gets real weird.
Yeah, this gets really weird, and it gets really fucking rough. Four of them...
One thing is, like, also, when I was reading about it too, is like when they found them. So when they found them out here... They basically found them. Where was it? It was another like ridiculous amount away from the cedar tree that they were all like kind of stationed around, right? Mm-hmm. they found that they had taken precautions against the cold. They literally had dug themselves into the ground,
right,
and had laid a bunch of cedar branches underneath them to basically create a barrier between them and the snow. And they were also discovered, when you hear the list of like how they discovered, they were wearing the other people's clothing. They had taken clothing from what may have been already dead bodies and were wearing them.
Yeah. Well, that's terrible. That's what hipsters do every time they go clothes shopping at a thrift store. They're wearing corpses' clothes.
All four of these people that were found suffered extremely traumatic deaths, although there was no outward appearance of trauma, no soft tissue damage. It was all internal injuries. The autopsy reports say, except for some of the more gruesome details we'll get to in a second, but the other details say that the injuries that they had could only be compared to the internal injuries that one gets from a car crash. So they were beaten.
Or making love to a Ben Kissel.
Ah, yes. That's very nice of you. Thank you. Yeah.
One of them had a fractured skull. His name was Nicholas Thibodeau Brignanel.
Oh.
Yeah. Another one was Alexander Zolotaryov. He had crushed ribs, but the most gruesome injuries were found on a woman named Ludmila Dubinina.
Do we know for sure that they weren't playing the hit me in the ribs with your head game?
Oh, I love that old Russian game.
Oh, it's a great
game. That's how president was chosen for up to 29 years.
That's right, yeah.
So this woman, I want to give you a bit of a background on her. She was active in tourist clubs. She liked to sing and take pictures, and many of the pictures of the last trip were shot by her, and the pictures will become much more important later because there was many pictures taken up until the night of the incident. And this was a tough woman. These were tough fucking people.
Yeah.
On one expedition 2 years earlier, she had been shot by another dude who was cleaning his rifle, and during the entire transportation back, she didn't complain. Not only did she not complain, but she felt bad for causing other people trouble, having to carry her.
I'm surprised she didn't say yes to that Russian wedding proposal. That sounds pretty nice. You shoot him, and then you get him.
If she lives, she is wife.
It's a better culture in a lot of ways.
If she dies, she dies.
She was wife, though.
And she's ghost wife.
Yeah, ghost wife is a great Russian movie.
So she is
ghost wife. It's the perfect Russian wife because she can't be heard.
Right. She's dead, yeah.
You could just drink vodka in your fucking men's room with all the fucking guys chain smoking cigarettes and still be officially married.
Nobody calls you gay, though, you know, because you got that ghost wife.
Oh, yeah. So she had quite a bit of clothing on. She wore a short sleeve shirt, a long sleeve shirt, and two sweaters. And her body was covered in underwear, long socks, and two pairs of pants. Her external pair of pants was badly damaged by fire and also ripped. She also had a small hat and two pairs of warm socks. In a last attempt to preserve her feet, she took off a sweater and cut it into two pieces and wrapped it around. So if you look, there were some people that left the camp completely in their underwear.
Yeah.
But this woman had multiple layers of clothing on.
She's like Jeff Daniels' character in Dumb and Dumber when Jim Carrey's character's hands are about to freeze off. Jeff Daniels' character has two pairs of gloves. Give some people some clothes, woman.
My hands are getting sweaty.
Good God.
So she had
like a comically dressed person who's like moving. You know what I mean? And she's just moving all her clothes at once.
Yeah.
Except she's dead now.
That's sad.
So she had some of the most gruesome injuries. First of all, and this is one, this detail is kind of what a lot of the mystery centers around. Her tongue was missing.
What do you mean?
Her tongue was missing. She had no tongue.
Like a watch? Like you're missing a watch?
Yeah, yes. It's just like, okay, got my keys, got my sunglasses. What am I doing?
She also had soft tissue missing around her eyes, eyebrows, and her left temporal area where bone was partially exposed, although that was mostly from the frostbite. But her eyes were also missing.
Oh, man.
No eyes, no tongue. Her nose cartilage was completely broken and flattened. She had four ribs broken on the right side. She had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 broken on the left side. The soft tissues of her upper lip were missing. Her teeth and upper jaw were exposed. She had a huge hemorrhage in her heart's right atrium. She had a big bruise in the middle of her left thigh and damaged tissues around her left temporal bone on her face. And it's also mentioned that her stomach had about 100 grams of coagulated blood. So what this means, the blood in her stomach, what this means is that her heart was beating and her blood was flowing when her tongue was removed. She was still alive when her tongue was removed. But the official cause of death was the hemorrhage to the heart, the multiple fractured ribs, and of course, the internal bleeding.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That is, you want to be asleep for that when the old tongue runs away.
Yeah. She definitely got the meat lover's pizza death.
Oh, yeah.
In that scenario. She kind of left, they did it all. They left it, they put it all on the menu.
Yeah.
So it was said in the official report that a lot of the injuries to her face, at least a lot of the missing stuff, those injuries were in line with putrefaction in a wet environment, which would have come from her laying face down in a stream. However, photographs of her corpse showed her body kneeling against a large boulder away from running water. The photographs and the official reports don't match up in a lot of different ways.
Who took the photograph there? We're going to get to that?
The investigators.
The investigator.
Yeah, the investigator. So the as we saw in the Andre Chikatilo episode, Russian investigators are not the best at their job.
Nope, not at all.
They're really bad at it, as we'll see again and again.
They're mostly just trying to get out of the cold.
Yeah, that's about it.
So yeah, these final four were much better outfitted than the other five because apparently, as Henry said, they took the clothes off of the dead. This guy, Zolotarov, he was found wearing Dubonina's coat and hat, while she in turn wrapped her foot in a piece of wool pants that one of the two found at the pine tree had been wearing. So there was a definite, not everyone died at once.
Right.
So some people died first, second, third. There was a long chain of events that resulted in the entire team ending up being dead.
It went cuckoo bananas.
It sounds like the definition, yeah.
Yeah, and this guy was very strange discoveries on his body and very strange injuries. His name was Semen Zolotarev.
That's a rough name. That's the worst one.
Yeah.
Semen Zolotarev.
My name is Cum Robertson.
He was found.
Cum Robertson?
Yeah, I had to change it when I left Russia. What were you in Russia?
Semen Zolotarev.
Oh, you were Siemens. Okay. Good choice. I guess good choice.
He was found with two hats, a scarf, a short sleeve shirt, a long sleeve shirt, a black sweater, and a coat with two upper buttons unbuttoned. And it was clear that he did not die from hypothermia. His lower body was protected by underwear, two pairs of pants, and a pair of skiing pants. He also had a lot of different items on him. He had a copy. He had newspapers. He had a lot of coins. He had a compass, few other items. His feet were protected by a pair of socks and a pair of warm leather handmade shoes known as a burka. And I guess that's what they call burkas in Russia.
They're all wrong.
And here's another really weird part. He had a camera around his neck.
Yeah.
Which is clearly seen in the pictures of his body. And this camera was a complete surprise to the guy that was left behind, the one survivor. He assumed that the group only had four cameras, which all four were found in the tent. But what this means is that Zolotarev had a secret camera that not only did he not tell everyone else about, but he grabbed the camera on the way out of the tent. He had
happening that he literally, the first thing he grabbed, it's like literally walking into the middle, negative 10 weather, the first thing he thought of was to grab the camera.
There's a good chance that was his poo-poo-pee-pee cam that he kept in the restroom, and he didn't want anybody to find his stash. I love that this guy
I don't want anyone to know that I take a picture every single time one of my dookies looks like a letter of the alphabet, because I think it's spelling a message. DRINK Y O drink your Ovaltine.
Oh, man.
You know, so we talk about Siemens camera, but but unfortunately, water damaged the film, so we don't actually know what, or at least the Soviets say that water damaged his film. So we don't know what images Siemens captured out there that night. But
interesting.
It's just, it's a rough name. Let's call him Zabalowski, whatever his name is.
He's going to be Siemens to till his memory is gone from this world.
Still
he will always
me.
Be Siemens.
Siemens.
And so, one, as far as Siemens' injuries go, his eyes were missing. Once again, you had missing eyes. He was also missing soft tissues around his left eyebrow where the bone was exposed. And he also, his chest was broken in. He had multiple ribs broken on the right side, fracture lines. He had an open wound on the right side of his skull. And these people, both Zolotarev and Dumanina, who had the worst of the injuries, they have injuries that are very similar in direction and force despite their differences in shape, height, and body composition, which would suggest that the two injuries were not a single uniform event, such as an avalanche.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, they were homemade.
Yeah.
Yeah, and while some say that they were attacked by Monsi tribemen, as I said earlier, coroners said that the trauma found required more force than a human being could inflict.
But they don't understand that the Manzi have a very specific style of attack, which they leave a banana tied to a string and they lead you out to a forest while one of the other ones are sitting behind the wheel of a truck. They just fucking pop you with a truck.
That makes sense.
So let's get to some possible explanations.
So this is the end of the evidence. That's what we know.
Yeah.
That is for certain, like, we found these bodies, these were the injuries, and that's kind of the story as it is.
And whatever the guy's name is still glued to the toilet somewhere.
Yuri Yudin.
Yuri Yudin. Still
still glued to the toilet.
Yeah.
So for the first bit of evidence, the first mystery that we have here is that their clothes were tested and found to be radioactive, or at least one member of the group. His clothes were tested and found to be radioactive. And what's weird about this is that the officials thought to check the clothes for radioactivity. It's not often that you come upon a group of nine bodies and you think, all right, well, let's get the Geiger counter out.
Mm-hmm. Well, but honestly, Russia has deposits of naturally, like, that's where plutonium comes from. They find it in the hills of of Russia. They know it's there. Uranium is just kind of around. The kids play with it because they think they're toys because are glowing, and they don't get real toys because the toys are given up to the fucking consulates at the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
It should be noted, however, that one of the guys, Yuri Krivonishenko, he was the guy that had the heightened radiation on his clothes. He had once worked at Chelyabinsk 40, a secret nuclear facility that experienced a disaster that became known as the Kushtymkoy incident.
So this guy survived a nuclear meltdown and was just like, I'm going to go skiing and celebrate my victory against death.
2 years earlier, the incident happened. There was a radioactive leak, and he was among the people who were sent to clean it up. But his body, of course, he would not still have that much radiation in his body 2 years later. The guy would have died. The only explanation for a link between these two things is if Yuri was still wearing the clothes that he was wearing when he cleaned up the nuclear reactor.
Unwashed.
And that just seems dumb.
Yeah. It's possible.
It just seems like, wouldn't they also be openly glowing? Or like something? Like, it would be it would be interesting. Also, that's the other thing, too. In Soviet, like, when they send them out to fix these fucking these nuclear power plants, it's like, it's literally just with, like, a bucket and a mop.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a day in the life of being a janitor in Russia. Maybe his shirt was sort of like a hyper-color shirt. Kind of changed colors if you touch it. It could be cool.
So going to the funerals of the actual victims, one eyewitness, granted, 12-year-old boy, but there were other eyewitnesses, other family members. But one 12-year-old eyewitness said that he saw the bodies, and he claimed that the bodies had a, quote, deep brown tan, which suggests that they possibly had an encounter with a nuclear weapons test, as the campsite was located on the pathway from Balakonur Cosmodrone to Chernaya Guba, which was a Soviet nuclear testing ground. And most
I'll
reports
also say that this was this Dyaldotav Pass was also kind of lesser known as the Jersey Shore of Russia.
Oh, you think they were putting on some tanner, huh?
Some spray tan.
Huh.
And most reports also insisted that their hair had lost all of its pigmentation and the hair was a dull shade of gray.
Wow, that's great. So this is a transport from the nuclear facilities, huh?
Yeah, it's a path between the... I mean, it was a Monsi path, but yeah. This path was also used to go between these two nuclear testing facilities.
Man, those Monsis had it rough.
Oh, my God. We'll get to them in
Too
a second.
Bad.
But another... And a really strange thing about this entire story was the links that the Soviet Union went to cover it up. If this was just an avalanche... then they would not have gone. They would not have checked for radiation. They would not have gone to the links. They sealed off the area for 4 years, and all of the documents about the case were sealed after they were closed. And when they finally became accessible in the 1990s during Glasnost, parts of the reports were missing. And other reports also suggest there was a lot of scrap metal in and around the area, which leads to speculation that the military had used the area secretly and might have been engaged in a cover-up. And Alexander Kolovatov, he kept a personal diary, and the only survivor of the group testified that it was with him on the last trip, but the diary was missing.
Also, it is notoriously difficult to research this topic in Russia.
Oh yeah,
they shut people out all the time. They talk. I was watching one thing, and basically, officials. It's kind of like the area. Well, Area 51 in America is now they make fun of you. That's how they beg you off. Where this is, it is they shut you down. They take your funding away if they remotely find out you are researching this. And it's like, why? If not, again, there's some sort of connection to either secret technology or who knows, a secret power plant, nuclear power plant.
Now all that might be moved. There's that good documentary Disinformation Men all about how, like, Area 51, it's probably... Now they want you to believe the aliens are there because they're no longer there anymore. You know, now it's just... It's a glorified truck stop full of trinkets and random gifts for grandpa. So I'm sure you can go check this place out now in Russia.
Yeah, you can go there. In fact, they do... people do hikes through the Dilatov Pass.
Yeah.
And there are certain superstitions surrounding it, of course, in that you can... People never hike through it in groups of nine.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. You try not to recreate the exact conditions of the Dilatov Pass incident. But people do still hike through there.
Keep on, put a little bell on the end of your tongue so you always know where it is. So you can't go missing.
All right. So the most likely explanation for this is that it was an avalanche, and the likely explanation for them being naked was a phenomenon called paradoxical undressing, which happens in 25% of hypothermia victims. What happens here is that the hypothalamus malfunctions, and you feel like you're getting warmer when your body is actually getting colder.
Now, this is a common way that they talk about the, like, high strangeness and disappearance cases. They always talk about this weird paradoxical undressing. It's just, but in 25%, it's like it just doesn't seem like it explains what happens here. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's different when you're by yourself, but when you're with a bunch of other people.
It's like, are you hot? Yeah, I'm hot.
I'm not a scientist.
Oh, maybe they're going for one last romp in the old snow or something.
They're trying to pull one of those Russian daisy chains.
Yep.
It's technically called a slag chain.
Oh, Jesus.
God. So, one supporting factor for the theory of the avalanche is that the avalanches aren't actually uncommon on any slope that accumulates snow, and then despite the area not being prone to avalanches, slab avalanches do occur in new snow, which we said earlier, the weather was pretty fucking terrible.
You know, when I'm having sex, that's the name of my finishing move. It's the slab avalanche. And then the woman just comes and comes when I give her the old slab avalanche.
I thought it was called riding the wave.
Yeah, that's what she does after the slab. You ride the slab avalanche. That's the wave it creates there.
Well, they say another thing that supports the avalanche theory is that the tent was halfway torn down and partially covered with snow, which could support the theory of a small avalanche pushing snow into the tent, which is why they cut open the tent and went outside. But the theory has gaps from what we can tell about the naked footprints left by the group. Everyone seemed to come out of the snow with relative ease. Like, they weren't trying to dig their way out of snow. And it is very unlikely that people with broken ribs and especially the broken chest would have been able to move at all, because these injuries that they found on these people, they were so terrible. I mean, if your chest bone is broken, you're not going to be able to dig your way out of an avalanche.
No way.
Like, there's no way that that's going to happen.
No, you're too busy going, ow, 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 ow.
Yeah, exactly.
Ow, 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 ow.
Yeah, and of course, these people, all these people were extremely experienced and well-trained, and they knew that the risk of getting out into this extreme cold was much higher than the risk of being killed by an avalanche, especially just in the flimsy clothing that some of them went out with.
Yeah.
And this is one of the biggest reasons why an avalanche isn't likely. If you compare pictures taken on February 1st by the Dilatov Pass group, and on February 26th, when the group was first found by investigators, you can see that a ski pole that was stuck in the ground kept its vertical position on the slope for weeks after the tragedy struck, which would be impossible had an avalanche came down off of the mountain to crush the campers.
And if you can pull that...
Or highly improbable.
Yeah. If you can pull
impossible.
That...
Impossible!
Impossible?
Yeah. And also,
the young Vladimir Putin went to that snow, and he took that little stick and he pulled it out of the snow, and now he's president. So think about that.
Another fairly reasonable scientific explanation for this is, I find this fascinating, it's called the Karman vortex.
This is very interesting, because I've heard of stuff about like this before. It's phantom noises created by the environment.
Yeah, this is amazing. So the shape of Dead Mountain Summit, combined with its proximity to the Dilatov Group's tent, they created the ideal conditions for something called the Karman Vortex, which occurs as a guy who wrote an entire book about the Dilatov. His name was Ikar. He wrote an entire book about the Karman Vortex and the Dilatov Pass incident. He said, when wind of a certain speed hits a blunt object of a particular shape and size, it causes a Karman vortex to be created, and a Karman vortex creates these tiny air vortices, which are just small tornadoes.
So this is kind of like, can this also maybe be called like the Mega Man vortex? Because that's not like the Mega Man villain weapon.
Yeah, it's like after you beat Air Man and Mega Man 2, the things that you shoot out of your hand.
Yeah, tornadoes.
Those little tiny tornadoes.
So little and tornadoes did all this?
It crushes your chest muscles and rips at your fucking tongue.
Well, exactly. The little tornado got into the people's eyes and things.
So what would happen with these small tornadoes? It would have produced infrasound, which infrasound is the sound is actually below the range of human hearing. So what these people actually found is they found these extreme vibrations in their body, and they found and they had like these inner ear malfunctions, which would have caused them to freak out.
Hey, Igor, hey, buddy, hey. How about you get your dick out of your pants?
Whoa!
Come on, Igor, come on. I think Ludwine has been giving you the look. Your boobie's been shaking just right. Come on, take your dick out of your pants. I'm gonna go for a walk.
I don't know what I'm hearing, but I am liking it.
Infrasound also causes nausea, and it causes objects to shake. It occurs from man-made sources and also in nature as a byproduct of earthquakes, landslides, meteors, and some tornadoes, including these mini tornadoes. And if any of you out there have ever been anywhere near a tornado, you know how fucking loud it is. It is so amazing. You cannot, if you've never been around one, you can't even imagine how fucking loud a tornado is.
Yeah.
What does a tornado sound like?
Oh, I thought it sounded like a bunch of cows spinning around.
Yeah, I thought it sounded like a woo woo woo.
Woo woo.
Ding 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 ba ding 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 ding. Woo.
TV still on. Ed O'Neill's yelling at some new wife of his.
Tornadoes.
Yeah.
Tornadoes. Yeah.
That was about right.
Yeah. So it could have been that these people were bombarded with infrasound, which would have caused them to freak out and to run out of the tent as far and as fast as they possibly could. And they got so far away from the tent that they couldn't find their way back. A couple of people died at the tree line. The other ones took their clothes off of them and wandered off into the wrong direction. And this guy claims that the whole tongue missing thing claims that it never happened.
What do you mean it never happened?
He claims that it never happened.
Where are the tongues?
No, just some cruel Russian investigator just going like, look, hey, everybody, look over here. Guy cut out the tongue, and look, never have to lick a stamp again.
Oh, that's great. I do think in Russia that would be a stamp licker. It's just the corpse's tongue. You just got to keep it wet.
So you mean to tell me that literally tiny tornadoes that made a lot of noise scared them out of the tents, and they ran away from them?
Yes, tiny tornadoes made a lot of noise. In addition to the noise, plus the infrasound, which tickled their inner ear hairs, which would have caused them to feel extremely fearful. It would have caused them essentially to freak out. They wouldn't have known what was going on, and all they wanted to do was get the fuck out of there as soon as possible.
The old man from Up would have really freaked out. He had a lot of those ear hairs.
So, of course, we...
For some reason... The Yeti Tea Party still sounds like a more credible argument.
I agree. I think it's definitely, at this point, we know for a fact it's the Yeti Tea Party until disproven.
Well, you haven't heard aliens yet.
Oh.
Because it is also a theory that aliens caused this entire incident to happen.
Well, the big thing we want to talk about, one thing that could tie aliens into it, is that if there was true that there was a secret sort of nuclear testing facility, aliens have been known to visit nuclear testing facilities, because they apparently, you know, alien phenomenon is linked to nuclear testing all the time because they're concerned about what we're going to do to our solar system.
Animals as humans. 150 miles northeast is the tiny village of Molyupka / Molebka, which is in the Perm region. And here in Molyupka.
In the Perm region, which is also where Lionel Richie was born.
Oh, I love Lionel.
He's great.
Yeah.
Over in this place, we find audio anomalies, sudden outbreaks of fire, electronic interference, plenty of UFO sightings, and very strange plasma balls.
Oh.
Yeah. The area also has an ozone smell to it. People experience strange fatigue, feelings of being watched, and the cell phone signal is terrible in the village, except in a 6x6 foot area where it's almost perfect.
Oh, yeah. That's where aliens set up their Wi-Fi hotspots so they could check their Instagram feeds.
Alien Instagrams are the funniest.
They are funny.
So interviews given by the lead investigator, a guy named Lev Ivanov, who, by the way, became obsessed with UFOs after investigating this incident. He said that he noticed that the pines in the forest around Dilatov Pass, particularly the ones where the bodies were found, were burned at the top.
Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The head of the character from Home Alone, the wet bandits.
And he said that he was told at the time to keep the case extremely shut to any and all media, to any and all other people, by the Soviet government, any kind of reports of bright flying spheres or anything like that, which were reported in and around the area in February and March of 1959. Mm-hmm. And the last photograph on the film in one of the cameras found in the tent appears to capture a giant flash against the night sky.
I saw the picture and it's very interesting.
Yes, it's very interesting.
You take a picture, it looks like it's a super blurry picture. I mean, you know, it doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
It could be a fucking balloon. I don't know what it is.
Ivanov said, I suspected at the time and am almost sure now that these bright flying spheres had a direct connection to the group's death. There were other UFO sightings in the area at the time. On the morning of March 31st, a group of search and rescue volunteers saw glowing, pulsating orbs in the sky, and another group of students camped out around 30 miles from the other group. They also reported similar sightings at the time. And in written testimony, one of those students said that he saw a shining circular body fly over the village from the southwest to the northeast. He said the shining disc was practically the size of a full moon, a blue-white light surrounded by a blue halo, and the halo brightly flashed like the flashes of distant lightning. And when the body disappeared behind the horizon, the sky lit up for a few minutes afterwards.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And another group of geologists 70 kilometers away from the mountains said that they saw some glowing and pulsating orbs flying in the direction of the campsite on the evening of the tragedy. And a group of Monsey hunters that camped out near this place claimed to have also seen flying orbs near the mountain on the night in question.
So aliens went there on a hot first date, and then the guy was like, what do you want, honey? And she's like, tongues and eyes! And then he just got tongues and
again?
Eyes for
her. Come, Krasdor. We must collect more tongues and eyes so I can finger-bang Krikrok.
Oh, Krikrok was hot as hell, though, man. Hot as hell.
So we've gone through science. We've gone through aliens. Now, time for some cryptids.
Uh-oh.
It's time for some yetis.
Yeah.
So one early European...
Again, this is the full package, kind of like Bridgewater Triangle. We got aliens, we got fucking nuclear testing facilities, and now we got tiny Manzi people.
Yeah, we got everything, man. These tiny Manzi people. One European traveler who first encountered them said that they possessed incredible powers. When one army was approaching these people, the locals started to destroy a mountain, or at least the Tartars thought that that's what they were doing. And when they returned, they left the area for 10 years, and when they returned, they found ruins, and when they tried to approach the locals, they were hindered by a cloud-like formation that appeared between the two groups, and the cloud was impenetrable. The Tartars lost their eyesight as they tried to approach it, but strangely enough, not even the Monsi people could cross the cloud to go over to the Tartars.
That's straight farce.
Yep.
Many indigenous cultures have used the art of harnessing farts in order to face various form of white men across this whole world. And I think the people of Ferguson...
You're going to bring Ferguson into this, huh? is that the right thing to do?
I'm just saying they can collectively... to fart.
So you want the black community of Ferguson to fart off
and
the
cops. And their white allies.
And their white allies, sure, but that's not getting the news press, is it?
Fart off the cops.
Fart it's off the cops. And as effective. A matter of fact, you can, if you are in police custody, fart all you want.
Please.
Why not?
We encourage it.
Fart it up.
Fart it up.
Do it. So the Monsi people, they have their own version of the Yeti called the Menkvi.
Ooh.
They say that it's an angry and violent human-like animal that roams the Ural Mountains. The legend claims that their behavior and aggression towards the humans is the reason why the gods punished the world with the Great Flood. And very few Menkvi survived on the very top of Mount Luv in Sjakvr. And others drowned. These creatures were left to walk in solitude across the empty land. They die, but they are later reborn in the same shape and appearance. Their bodies themselves are invincible, but even if something destroys the Menkvi, there is a way to repair the damage. It is possible to create a new Menkvi from the bodies of his fallen comrades, just as it's possible to use parts of robots to build a new robot.
What if you're one of the Menkvis that becomes one of the parts for the other Menkvi?
Then you're part of the it's the Menkvi. It's a new Menkvi.
So you're its arm or something?
I think whoever has the head is the main Menkvi.
Ah. All right.
One who's got the dick.
Yeah.
So several members of the search party that found the victims of the Dilithop Pass incident, they remembered that when they told the native Monsi that the native Monsi were shocked when they described the injuries to them. Some of them believed, of course, some of the Minsi believed that the deaths could have been caused by a Menkvi, since several caribous and reindeer belonging to a local Mansi herder were killed by a Menkvi just a few weeks prior to the accident, and the bodies of 9 Mansi hunters that were found dead on that same mountain that were left in place, but those bodies too showed very strange signs of internal damage. The same types of internal damage that the Dilatov Pass people suffered.
Oh, very interesting. So everyone's pointing fingers here.
Everyone's pointing fingers. Hmm. And most interestingly, the American Embassy in Nepal sent a document to the Department of State in Washington entitled Regulations Covering Mountain Climbing Expeditions in Nepal Relating to the Yeti.
That was just a bored senator.
Oh, yeah. If you're a senator, I mean, that's the cool thing about...
You just saw one of the only Himalayan basketball players up there.
Exactly.
It was just Strom Thurmond.
Exactly.
Looking for one more person to be racist towards.
If you're a congressman or a senator, I would, like, once a week, I would just be like, Sasquatch, just in the subject line, and just, like, send it out. It'd be so fun. People take you very seriously in those positions.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yes, this document contained 3 regulations for climbers that they must abide by should they encounter a Yeti. Very interestingly, the date on the document, December 20th, 1959.
Just shit!
Oh, fuck!
Just a few short months after the Dilatov Pass incident.
Cool. What are the 3 steps?
I don't know. I didn't look those.
All right. Very good.
First thing you do is you get the Yeti drunk. Second thing you do is you play party jams for the Yeti. Get him dancing. Third thing you do, let him sleep it off.
Oh, that's nice. Yetis need to rest.
Also, he may have had some incident with sleeping with some sort of Yeti woman up there, and he's trying to cover up a secret pregnancy.
Yeah, that's a good. There's a good chance of that.
Just whatever you do, if you go up and down the mountain, you see a monkey woman. But the last thing you do, the thing you don't do, you don't fuck it, because they can, will, and they will definitely carry the child to culmination, and you will be responsible for it.
Oh, man.
The last possible thing we're going to cover, the last possible cryptid, is called the Vorsa.
Cool.
The Vorsa, they were representations of the lords of the forest. If a whirlwind appeared, it was a sign that a slew of forest sprites, possibly a wedding party, were around. And at such times, one could see the spirits for oneself by looking through one's legs and squinting through one's fingers.
Well, that just seems like a weird doctor. Like a strange, like, doctor exam.
The Vorsa came in many forms. Some of them looked like humans, and others were gigantic beings without any clothes, ugly and bearded with reversed feet, lacking eyebrows and eyelashes, and many were without a shadow. And sometimes the Vorsa were described as a tall man in a black wool coat.
Well, I just checked. My feet are straightforward, so I am fine. I'm not one of them.
You see that in a lot of different... A lot of ancient folklore, especially when you're talking about demons and such, you see the backwards feet quite a bit.
Yeah.
Which is very strange, but I find that fascinating.
The origins of the backwards feet is actually because they are hunting societies. The thing that has backwards feet is very difficult to track. Because when it's walking, it looks like it's walking backwards.
Wow. All right. There we go.
Making them even more terrifying.
Nice.
So yes. We just gave you guys many different explanations, possible explanations for the Dilatov Pass incident. Ben, what do you think it was?
Well, I think it was aliens on a date. That's what I'm going to go with.
Henry, what do you think?
I think that it was, to be honest, it may be these fucking tiny tornadoes that made Igor take his dick out of his pants.
I'm honestly going for tiny tornadoes. I really am. I think it's the most reasonable explanation.
Tiny tornadoes have it, but leave a message on the Facebook page and let us know what you think or some other theories that you might have.
Yeah, if we missed any in our research, let us know. Be sure to go to the Facebook group. Join the Facebook group if you haven't. It's a wonderful community over there. We got almost 3,000 members now.
Oh, great.
Thank everyone out there who comments
and like
on it and post
rate us on iTunes. Five stars, please.
Yeah.
That's right. Or however many stars you think we're worth. Just be true to yourself.
Yes. Five stars, please.
And if you want your very own Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt, go to cavecomedyradio.com/Last Podcast on the Left, and you can get one for $25 here in America or $40 overseas. Or if you just want to give us $5 here and there, if you want to donate just a little bit, that's fucking great too. Just whatever you can helps.
That's great. And listen to all the other shows here on Cave Comedy Radio, especially the ones that Marcus Parks and I do.
That's right.
All right. So that's Marcus Parks on Twitter. I'm Ben Kissel on Twitter. That's Henry Loves You on Twitter. I'm going to say a hail yourself.
I'm going to say a hail game.
Hail Satan, please. And then will you also hail me after you hail Satan?
Hail Satan, please. Hail Satan, please. All right, everyone.
If you would, please do that.
Yes.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Magustalations. We will talk to you soon.
Magustalations to you all.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.